When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, Kevin Goatee, Gutting the Sacred Cow. Well, this tears it. I've come to the point now where the one film, maybe there's a couple left, but this is one of the films I thought would never, ever, ever be attacked, but Don Jameson has a nose for these kind of things. Don's back, and he wants to do Goodfellas. Yeah, this film I thought was beyond bulletproof, but Don loves going for these insanely sacred cows. Who did I get to help co-host? Kevin Israel is my Mariano Rivera to sit in that co-host chair, and boy oh boy, we sit here and figure out if Don is going to end up like Pesci. He's gone, and there's nothing we can do about it, but let's find out.
Gather around, here's what I know.
Put it on the Underhills tab. Kevin Israel. Hey, buddy.
I'm so excited because not only do I know the quote, but it's a movie I love.
Oh, really? So let's hear it.
I love Fletch.
I rewatched it recently because Bill Schultz was up my ass about it. And boy, do I find it disappointing. The jokes aren't there.
I just rewatched it and I loved it.
did you watch the John Hamm threequel?
Yes, that was terrible.
I tapped out in about 15-20. Who gives a shit? Kevin Goatee, Kevin Israel, and goddamn, I love seeing this face. Don Jameson returning to the show for the umpteenth time. This is why Don comes back all the time. First of all, again, soft on the eyes, hard on the penis, as I like to say. Secondly,
meow.
Just made that up. Don has a knack for finding films that are, he's never someone I have to go back and forth on with a film. It's like, I don't know, not enough. People are going to give a shit. Don every time. Die Hard, Matrix, Leaving Las Vegas a little bit. He sat in co-host on The Sandlot with Mike Price. Don, this is the one film. This is the film. I said, no chance that this film will ever be breached on this podcast. We had Godfather about a month ago. I said, still, no chance that this film will ever be breached. Don has decided to go right to the summit of the mountain and say, you know what, fellas? Goodfellas, not that good. And I threw my hands in the air, snapped the pencil, discussed, and said, see you in 3 weeks. Done.
Well, listen, the last time I was on was with Dr. Drew, and I had to school him on One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. So right. I may have bitten off a little more than I could chew this week, but you know, we emailed, I said, give me a week to really think if I can do this.
Right.
And then I had an epiphany. I said, I can do this. I know I can do this. I won't get into the whole thing right this second, but I just want to say at the top, I'm not trying to say this is a bad movie. I'm just going to let people know it's not as good as you think. You're going to have to pay attention. And when we get done here, you're going to leave a little sadder than when you logged in.
Oof, especially on Columbus. Yeah, especially on Columbus Day with all you Italians out there. This is going to rile some feathers. Like, good luck. Good luck. Goodfellas. 1990 budget of $25 million. Box office haul, $47 million. Is not an overarching success financially. 2023 money, $58.7 million budget, $110 million. Huh. Yeah.
Don. So, Kev, this came out when we were freshmen in high school, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
90.
Yep.
So, I mean, I don't remember. Not that I don't think this would have been a movie I would have gone and seen anyway, but I don't remember anything significant about this movie coming out.
I do. And here is why. There are two. This came out and right after or before a film I had circled on my calendar for months. They were playing at the same theater. I wanted to see them more, the first one more so than this. I asked my parents, who are anti-R-rated films, until I was 17. The first film, Steven Seagal's Out for Justice. I wanted to see that same
little different movie.
Actually, not really. They're both Brooklyn accents. A lot of Italians.
Ish. Yes.
A lot of, hey, yo, Vinny, you know, that stuff.
Yeah. That's a good point. Oh, that's a good point.
Thank you. By the way, what if you old fellas, 30 years ago today, a little classic came out starring Sylvester Stallone and Wesley Snipes called Demolition Man. How old do we feel now?
And when was that set?
2015, I think, right? Or something like that?
Yeah, it was the teens.
Dude, I love that film. I saw it in the theater opening weekend.
So good.
Goodfellas quotes. We're going to be here all goddamn night. So I cut myself to about only a scant 17.
Jesus. I'll log back in an hour.
No, I cut it down. I have a few off the beaten path and a couple obvious, but I'll let you guys get a lot of the obvious ones out of there. Everyone has to take a beating sometimes. Love that line. No one says it, but it holds true. The obvious one, I'm going to go get the papers. Everyone drops that out. I tell you something, go fuck your mother. Hey, what are you doing here? I thought I told you to go fuck your mother. I mean, Pesci being Pesci. You motherfucker, I almost had him, you stuttering prick Henry. Again, ubiquitous. You can hear them at any bar at any time. 2R, Rossi, nothing but a whore. Janice Rossi, whore. Jimmy! Hey, every time I see a buddy named Jimmy, am I? He's in the shower screaming. Business is bad? Fuck you, pay me. Had a fire? Fuck you, pay me. The place got hit by lightning? Fuck you, pay me. And my all-time favorite quote from this film, and at least once every week or two, he's gone. And there's nothing we could do about it. What do you mean he's gone? He's gone. And that's it. Kevin Israel, I left a lot of meat on the bone for you and Don Jameson. So you boys fight over it.
You definitely
fuck you,
hit.
Fuck you, pay me is is a career in comedy.
Yeah. Boy, Kevin Israel, doesn't that ring true for you at the last weekend?
That cuts close to my heart. Still don't have that. Still don't have that money, by the way.
Surprise.
What do you mean I'm funny? Funny how? Yeah. Obviously. This one I always laugh at, but I don't think I ever think of it outside of the movie. The hoof. You know, the hoof. It's a sin. I'm a good shot. What do you want from me? This one was great. This one is a little off the beaten path. He's so jealous. If he even catches me looking at someone, he'll kill me. That's great.
The eye roll, she sold that. Yeah.
I got nowhere else to go, Paulie. And that was mine. You, the rest of you. Oh, and obviously, Karen.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot too. No, go get your fucking shine box.
Oh, shine box, right. Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
And of course, the other one. What am I, the pain of mindless spider? Give me a cutty in water. The whole scene. You can just quote. Don Jameson, I know you've got plenty queued up. Let's hear him.
It's more the omission of something that's more glaring than the quotes, because everybody knows these quotes from Goodfellas. Because like you said, you hear them in bars, you hear them talking to other comedians, you hear them talking to friends. But to have Samuel L. Jackson in the movie and him not utter the word motherfucker one time is the film's already disqualified right there.
He hadn't gotten to that point yet. He wasn't the king of fuck.
That's like That's like seeing an Ernest P. Worrell film and not seeing him go,
it's exactly like that.
Ernest.
When I think of two parallel acting careers, I think of Ernest Worrell and Samuel L. Jackson.
Basically the same guy.
Yeah.
Rewatching Animal House. By the way, the Dean Warmer from Animal House is also the bad guy, and Ernest goes to camp. There's a little fun fact. Speaking of fun facts, five fun facts. The real life Henry Hill's crime resume is way too long to fit in a single movie, even with a meaty, sounds a little gay, but meaty 1 hour, 148 minute runtime. In fact, I wrote this in my notes too, because after watching this a million times, I just shot up. I listened to Stern for years. Henry Hill talked about it all the time. Scorsese left out a crime that became a national sports controversy, the Boston College point shaving scandal. This is where Jimmy Burke, De Niro, in the movie, and Henry Hill recruit Boston College players Rick Kuhn, Jim Sweeney, and Ernie Cobb to manipulate scores to cover point spreads. Win, but don't cover. That, I'm surprised, did not make that cut. Again, seeing this so many times, You know what they never talked about is the BC's scandal.
I don't think it's quite as sexy as murder.
Well,
yeah, and I have a worse cut than that, but go all ahead. Right.
Okay.
Continue.
Number two. It's time for my favorite section of who was almost in this film. I'm going to give you two names that you're like, of course he should have been in it. And the other one you go, are you kidding me? This would have been dog shit. I'll give you hints. One, megastar in the 70s, 80s, but mostly 70s and 80s, whatever, to agree, 90s a little bit. The second one is a megastar from the 80s, well, some of the 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010, even now, megastar. Go. Two guesses for each of you. One obvious, one not so obvious.
Pacino?
Pacino is one. He said no to playing Jimmy Conway to take what film role, Kevin Israel? I bet you get this if you think hard enough. Think of the time this came out.
90. Cape Fear?
Dick Tracy. He was Big Boy Caprice.
He was in Dick Tracy?
You never saw Dick Tracy?
I mean, I haven't. I just remembered the song that Madonna sang.
Yeah, he was Big Boy Caprice. He was the main bad guy. I rewatched it again not long ago. It's not that great.
So he was the obvious one.
For Jim Conway, right. Jimmy Conway.
Yeah. I'm going to go Mark Price, Skippy from Family.
Who was just on Carolla's podcast the other day. How funny you pulled that out. Unless you heard that too. Do you want to take a guess on who the other guy was to play
you
Henry
said
Hill?
You said he was huge pretty much from the 80s till now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Shining A-lister.
Shining. Wow.
Doubt about it.
Orson Welles.
I mean, his final role was the role of Unicron in Transformers, but no. As a last, he died in 1987. No, sir. Kevin Israel, want to throw out a guess?
Jack Nicholson.
Tom Cruise.
I was going to say Tom Cruise. I was going to say Tom Cruise.
Jack Nicholson has been in a movie since The fucking Departed, buddy. Come on. Or thereabouts. Can you imagine Cruise?
Godfellas.
Yeah. Cruise as this man.
As who? God.
As Henry Hill.
Oh, that would have been weird. That would have been a totally different movie. Right. That would have been weird.
I mean, yeah, Tom Cruise from upstate New York versus Ray Liotta from Union, New Jersey. Yeah, yeah, good move. No, good move. No.
Yeah, he'd be trying to get everybody in, you know, not only into the you know, with the gangsters, he'd also be trying to get them into Scientology. That is too weird.
He would have been too likable. Like, he would have been too, like, Ray Liotta was just a shithead enough.
Right. Karen, you're not a Theta 4.
he'd be good at jumping up and down on a couch when a heist would.
Or running from the long arm of the law, those arms scissoring furiously at their sides.
Yes.
Henry, you know it. Henry Hill was paid $550,000 for Goodfellas, not including any money he made as being a famous part of this film. Back in his days of his wise guys, that movie fee was chump change. He averaged between $15,000 and $40,000 a week, and that's in the early 70s.
Wow.
Number four, one Goodfellas actor claimed The Simpsons ripped him off, and he sued them for $250 million. Frank Severo, the guy who played Frankie Carbone, filed a whopping $250 million lawsuit against The Simpsons for appropriating his looks and mannerisms when creating a little-known Springfield mob associate named Louie. The Simpsons writer lifted his likeness while living next door to him in Sherman Oaks in 1989, the year before Goodfellas' release. Louis debuted on the show in 1991, Bart the Murderer, and has appeared in 50 episodes in total of The Simpsons. That is true. He looks very, very similar.
Yeah.
This is actually, I gave you a couple bonus ones. The next one, this film received the worst score in test audience history for Warner Brothers, with audiences leaving in droves, disgusted by violence, drugs, and language. Scorsese said the numbers were so low that it was funny.
That's interesting. That ties in with a theory that I have. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
This is Don just like, all right, I got this, I think.
I like it.
After the film's premiere, the real Henry Hill was so proud he went around revealing his true identity and boasting the film was about him. The FBI had to remove him from the witness protection program. Bonus fun fact. Do you know who killed Tommy? In real life, the character, Pesci's character, Tommy, who killed
that was Mark Price.
That's Mark Summers from Double Dare. Physical challenge. You have to kill a mob boss. No,
it was Suzanne Summers.
We could do this all day, and I'm here for that. Any guess, guys? I guarantee you, if you think long and hard, you can get this answer. Who killed Tommy in real life?
The fuck was his name? You're going to say it, and I'm going to get so pissed off. I just can't remember the family's name.
Oh, man. Yeah, why can't – I'm probably thinking the same guy as you are.
Would that
the
name
Teflon
be –
Teflon Don, the Teflon Don.
John Gotti, yep. Is correct.
Gotti. That's who I was thinking of, yep.
By the way, the Gotti film with Travolta, terrible. The Gotti film with Armando Sante that was on HBO, fantastic. Find it,
really?
Watch it. Yeah, it's great. Well, that's a lot of fun facts. So we're going to get the audience. The audience is in on the mix in Ask a Gutter. At Brandon Oglesby, the Newark Knight, first the Godfather, and now Goodfellas. Marone, what is going on here? Is the one shot of Henry Hill taking his date through the kitchen in the restaurant still iconic, or can you or the host name better ones? Don, you first.
A Boogie Nights. Come on. Give me a break. I mean, he takes her to a table and they have a martini. And Boogie Nights, someone gets pussy at the end of the shot.
Yeah. All right. I don't remember that, but I'll buy that. It's a great film. Israel, you got one?
Wait, was it an iconic restaurant scene? What was the question?
Is there any more iconic than the one shot of him taking his date through the kitchen into the restaurant? Or can you guys name a better one?
In the Copa. When he takes Karen through the Copa. But the Boogie Nights shot is longer and better.
I think it'd be a better shot to see when Jim Florentine guides Don through the kitchen at Chili's and then getting the best table in the house.
Well, we're performing there that night, obviously.
I can't think of one. Kevin Israel, you have a better one than that? Or that's
Nothing that specifically pops to mind, no.
You guys don't remember the Boogie Nights one where William H. Macy catches his wife banging another guy and he goes out to the car, gets the gun, and shoots him? That's great.
Yeah, or she's like the first person shooter angle.
Yeah. She's like, come on, finish up, stud. I remember that line.
Yeah. You've heard that more than once.
Meow. The second half of his question, does Lorraine Bracco play a better mob wife or therapist?
Oh.
Don.
Not the same.
Same. Israel?
Yeah, I think she played a better mob wife.
Really? I guess I'm with Don. I think she was equally solid in both. By the way, she was dating and married Harvey Keitel for a long time. Can you imagine those two having sex after watching Bad Lieutenant? I can't. If you saw, I remember that thing, the film, for two reasons. One, Harvey Keitel, it's always cold for him, apparently, and Mad Dog Russo doing a lot of voiceover work in the in that film. Number two, at Xyphos, could Don show me on the doll where the bad man touched him? It's
the bad man touched me in all the right places, and this is why I became a comedian.
I was going to say he ended up a stand-up comedian, so it was a lot of touching.
Yeah. A lot of touching.
At Lord Snurts, who has our scores locked and loaded. Gutter question: what's your mob name? Mob name? Excuse me, Don the. Besides Jameson, Don the Jameson.
Donnie the hair. Donnie the hair. Come on. 57 Donnie, years old. Look at the hair.
Donnie Locks.
Donnie Locks.
Oh, the Jew mob. That's hilarious. Donnie right. Locks.
Donnie Vinyl.
Donnie Vinyl. I don't know if I have. I mean, not really a German mob unless you count that little gathering in 1941. You know, that's the Germans aren't known for mobs. So I will. How about the Chancellor? No?
The Chancellor.
Don Chancellor? No. Kaiser? Kaiser fits. I don't know how. At Rex Crumb, I know Don will be hilarious. Oh, do you, Rex Crumb? Are you sure? Even though I can't fathom how anyone could hate Goodfellas. That being said, if you pulled off the Lufthansa heist, how long could you sit on your cut before buying yourself a Cadillac, land yacht, or fur coat land? You need, God damn it, Rex Crumb, punctuation. Cadillac, land, yacht, or a fur coat for your mistress. So, Don, the question is, Don, how long would you wait to buy a 1989 Plymouth Reliant K car and splurge?
Who says I don't already have one?
A second one, you rich son of a bitch.
A different color for every day of the week. this is a good question because we're gonna talk about the Lufthansa heist. So get ready for it.
All right,
I could see Don in a caddy. I could see Don in a caddy. That would be a good look, Don. I have to be a convertible.
My hair could flow.
You know what? I think it would be tough, but if Jimmy told me not to buy something, I don't think I'd fucking buy something. I mean, whatever you say, man. Right.
I think I pay attention good enough and I've seen enough mob movies to know, like, don't buy shit. This is how you get caught.
But dummies. It's in her mother's name. Yeah. It's in her mother's name.
Yeah. Italians. We're going to have some fun with that one in a minute. Joe Loves Kim. Why would guys keep working with Jimmy knowing he kills everyone?
It's a great question.
Right. That's like not wearing a condom with the girl who just bangs everybody. Like, it'll be all right.
Not me.
I've got immunity. I've got the dick of Colossus and the healing powers of Wolverine. Next thing you know, Don's getting him lasered off from a Groupon at a mall in Piscataway.
Yeah, that I drove my Reliant K to.
This is going to be a long episode. All right. That's going to close Ask a Gutter. And boys and girls, no one listens to the end of podcasts because why? Don Jameson, what are you up to besides four? Never mind. That's not going to pan out. I'm just going to cut it off right now. Don, what are you up to, pal?
I just recorded a comedy special at McSorley's Ale House in New York City. So
sweet.
That'll come out sometime, probably early next year. And other than that, I'm on the road. So follow me on my socials, Don Jameson Official, Real Don Jameson. Wherever you find me, that's where I'll be.
You couldn't get the Grizzly Pear book for that night instead?
I'm working on it. I'm working on it. That place is not easy to get into.
No. Don't shoot so high.
No. You have to bark for at least 6 months first, but then you can get your stuff there. Kevin Israel, what are you up to besides wiping green diarrhea your new daughter's behind?
I'm back on stage at the end of this month. My calendar is on my website, kevinisrael.com. I got some dates in October and November, and some are in December trickling in. So check it out. Come check me out. I've got a lot of really, really hacky dad material that you're going to love.
GuttingTheSacredCow.com. Grab a shirt, hat, bag, whatever. More importantly, leave that 5-star rating, 2 or 3 sentence review on your podcast platform of choice. and guttingthesacredcow at gmail.com if you want to advertise with us. Got a fantasy football jibber jabbers off to a roaring start. I was 19-3 last week. Don't worry, folks. It's never going to happen again. Making an absolute shitload of money. Follow the picks. 64% against the spread. That, my friends, is how you have a second income. And slowly and surely, hopefully digging out of corporate America and having fun doing that. Fantasy football jibber jabber on YouTube and wherever you listen to podcasts. Don Jameson, I am too messin' to try and hear this argument. Kevin, I want to see if what lasts longer, Don's argument or Aaron Rodgers' Achilles. I think
it's going to be a toss-up for sure.
I was going to say that. It's going to be a coin flip, kids, because the torches are lit, the pitchforks are sharpened, and the lube is left home because it's a dry anal raping on this one. Kevin Israel, let's have Don Jameson
gut the
sacred cow.
All right. I'm going to start by saying congratulations to Kevin Israel on a new addition to his family.
Thank you.
But I got to call him out for coming onto the show this week. I don't see the guy for years. All of a sudden, he wants to ride Don Jameson's coattails to the Holy Land, okay? Because he knows that this is going to be the highest rated episode of ever in its history. No one's dared to do what I've done.
No.
All right? This will be the greatest gutting ever.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Big ratings. Ratings you can't even believe. All right, I don't do impressions, obviously, but the point is he's glomming off my fame.
Yes, and 100%.
And I don't blame him because I'm excited because, number one, I want to start by saying I don't dislike mobster movies. In fact, I usually love them. So this is not a matter of I don't like the genre. So, you know, I love Godfather. I love Scarface. I love Casino. I love Donnie Brasco. All those I love. Don't have much of a problem with any of those as much as I do with this 2 hours and 26 minutes, which is already way too long for this movie to be.
Hold on. You said you like Casino. That film is 3 hours. So
Casino's a much better film, and with a much more cohesive storyline. But let's get into it. How come we've all seen this movie multiple times, right? You can't escape it. It's like it's next to the Shawshank Redemption as the most showed thing on TV and anywhere else in the world. And when you see it, you end up getting trapped watching it. How come after all these watchings, after all these people who say they love the movie so much, it's the greatest movie ever. Love it. Everybody's seen it. They can only ever remember one scene in the whole movie. And that's the Pesci scene. Am I a clown to you? That is the only scene anybody ever talks about. That's the only scene anybody could ever remember. They can remember every line of it, but they can't. That's the one scene. Nobody ever.
I disagree. I would say the most ubiquitous scene has to be, without fail, the Billy Bat scene with the shine box. That is the most iconic scene in this film. Not the clown scene.
No, nobody ever references that.
I disagree.
No, it's a great scene. I'm not saying it's not a great scene. It is, but it's sort of like that's the thing everybody knows. It's like, you know, the viral videos of the late night shows where, you know, you see the 2-minute carpool karaoke video and everyone, the show must be so funny. And then they watch the whole show and they go, oh, no, that was the actual part that was good. So just because you have one great scene in the movie does not make the whole movie great. And on top of that, this scene has tortured all of us, three stand-up comics here, and you know what I'm talking about. That moment where you say to somebody accidentally, hey, that you're really funny. And you see that look in their eye. And you pray in that 2-second delay that they are not going to go into that scene. and they always disappoint. People cannot resist. They have to go into the Pesci thing. And it's never funny, and it's always torturous and hacky, and they never get it right, and they never get it close. And that's been the bane of our existence for years. Don't ever tell somebody, I think you're funny, because they're going to launch into that scene, and it's a nightmare. It's like when I used to live in a building in New York, and I lived in apartment 2B.
Oh,
what did somebody say when I said I lived in apartment 2B?
Don Jameson is a whore. Jameson 2B whore.
That's amazing.
I mean, look, you're right.
But they were right.
Mm-hmm. You got the shine box scene. You got the "Am I a clown to you" scene. But that's like saying, like, you know, like a crappy album that has one or two good songs on it is a great album. Is Pablo Honey by Radiohead a great album? No.
Trick question. Radiohead stinks. Nice try.
One song, Creep. Yeah. All right. Metallica, Saint Anger. One song, Some Kind of Monster. So one great scene does not make a great movie. All right. Let's move on. Let's talk about the incredibly obtrusive and nonstop torturous voiceover that throughout the entire film. There's not a moment where there's not voiceover. Usually when there's that much voiceover in a film, it means one thing, and that is there is a lack of direction. And my feeling is, and you said it in one of the reviews, was they got the lowest ratings in the test screenings. And there's a reason. When Scorsese put this together, it was terrible. And he knew that, and he saw him, and he goes, I got to salvage this somehow. And he wrote a whole script of VO to save the film, to try to piece it together, because what he filmed did not work as a movie. I mean, I don't mind some VO in a movie, but it's like talking dirty to someone, okay? You know, a little bit accentuates the mood, all right? Over-talking, instant cock blocker. And that's what I think of the voiceover in this movie. It cock blocks all the action. And a lot of times it doesn't even the VO doesn't match up with the action. All right, let's talk about the characters. Paulie is no Don Corleone. He is the melatonin godfather. He doesn't come off as a mob boss as much as he comes off as the neighbor who, like, you know, knocks on your door when the music's a little too loud. And, hey, could you keep it down a little bit? He is to Don Corleone what Imus was to Howard Stern in their prime.
Wow.
Wow. That's a nuke. That's a nuke right there.
Don Imus with his shepherd haircut catching strays while dead for 10 years. So that's cool.
Well, that's true. But speaking of Howard Stern, Henry Hill on that show Drunk has more memorable moments than this movie does. I can quote way more funny lines from Henry Hill Drunk on the Stern show than I can in this, because once again, one scene. All right. Why did Henry and Karen move into her mother's house when they got married? He was making $15,000 to $40,000 a week. You don't move in with somebody's parents. That was stupid and ridiculous, much like the scene with the mother. That was so more over the top than Dylan Mulvaney's impersonation of a woman.
What if I told you one of my fantasy football team's names was Dylan Mulvaney's panties hamster with a dude's dick hanging out?
You're 19-3. I'm not going to argue with you.
In that league, I'm 4-0. I might become 4-1. I think I'm going to lose this week. But anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
Why did Karen have so much VO? She had VO in half the film. She should have been, you know, more of an incidental character. Because face it, the mob wives in movies are just there so that they could show the mobster with their gumon. And basically, she was, to me, an incidental character. She had tons of voiceover. I didn't get that. Maury, the wig guy. The best part of the movie is the commercial, because that really it is, right? Because it shows you, like, back then, like, we had, for people who remember, we had Crazy Eddie here, you know, in the New York, New Jersey metropolitan area. And everyone tried to be Crazy Eddie. And that's what Maury, the wig guy, was. After that, he's useless. You don't care about him. You don't know what his role is in the mob. And by the time you get to the end of the film and he gets whacked, you couldn't care less because you're not invested in his character at all. At best, he was annoying, complaining 2/3 of the movie about not getting paid for something. And they just kind of push him aside like the insignificant guy that he was. So that character, to me, it held no weight. So the extent of his character development was that commercial to me. And then Tommy, when Tommy gets whacked at the end, you don't care because he was such an asshole. You're like, yeah, good. He got whacked. He got what he deserved. What they should have done, because he was so unlikable, was to show him getting whacked, show them torturing this son of a bitch, whack the guy out, and show the violence of it, because then you'd really get invested in it. Because Tommy you might like him as far as he's part of the movie, but he's not a likable character. He's completely hateable. So when he gets whacked, there's no explanation. It's just like, all right, he got whacked. Next scene, more voiceover. All right. And then let's talk about the Lufthansa heist. You're talking about some college sports, which not even real sports, by the way. College sports shaving a point here or there. Who cares? The Lufthansa heist was the biggest cash robbery to that point in history. And they glossed over it like Tommy was going to take a dump for 5 minutes. It's like, we're going to rob this plane. And then the next scene, they're like in a bar having a drink. What happened? Show the robbery. Show all the planning that went into the robbery. Show how they connected with the people at the airport. None of that stuff. It's just like, okay, Lufthansa height, more voiceover. Now we're in a bar. Completely glossed over, and so you don't care. Also, where did all the money go? Nobody said where the money went. All the mobsters are just as poor after the Lufthansa heist than they were before.
Yeah, true. Mm-hmm.
And then, for me, like if they would have built that out, that could have been, you know, a much better ending, because then after that, with the coke and everything, it was, again, it got really anticlimactic with all that stuff. It just didn't really follow, because now Henry gets busted by the feds apparently, but then how come he's out walking on the street like 2 minutes later?
Because he talked.
Shouldn't he be held in federal prison?
Yeah, he talked. He went to state's evidence, and that's how he got out.
Yeah, but did they let you just go walk back down the street and then, you know, become a cokehead after that? And speaking of which, the scene in the bathroom where Karen flushes all the coke and he that overdramatic, why? She just saved him probably like 30 years behind bars by doing that. Like, she should be kissing her ass at that point. You know, thank you for all the VO I didn't have to do and for flushing the coke.
I like how he's like looking behind the TV and then he's like, they would have never found it here.
Yeah.
Behind the TV. Yeah. Like the FBI would have been like, ah, it's definitely not in there. Don't even bother opening that.
He didn't go to a desk, take a statue's head, lift it and twist a knob, and then a false wall fell down to have a whole separate two fire poles to go down, and that can be the coke safe house. No, Ray, you're right. You guys are right. They would have found that shit. All they have to do is bring the goddamn dogs in there, and it would have been game over, man. Game over. Yeah, right. That was silly. But also, again, he's coked out of his tits. I don't think logic is playing a major role in this, in his processes.
Yeah, the dog wouldn't have sniffed the key under the mat either. we'll come into the grand finale here. But Scorsese, by his own admission, did not want to direct this film. Pesci, by his own admission, did not want to star in this film. Can we agree that The Godfather is the gold standard for mob movies? Can we generally agree on that?
So, being that if you listen to this podcast, you will know that despite Jackie Cation's attempt, I already said The Godfather is a perfect 10. So, by de facto, I will agree that The Godfather is the de facto and perfect film in the mob genre.
All right, Kevin.
Nope.
What would you get? All right, on scale.
We'll get to his number in a minute, and we'll get to my number in a minute, too.
All right. So my point is, and which you agree with, let's say it's a perfect 10, right? Mm-hmm. If that's a 10, so that means The Godfather is a Picasso, right?
Sure.
That makes good, and is Goodfellas The Godfather? No, it's not. So if Godfather is a 10, is a Picasso. Goodfellas is a Hunter Biden. Let's be honest.
You mean it's denying its laptop's presence and how it has ties with China and Russia?
If Godfather and Scarface are Rachel and Monica in their prime, Goodfellas is Phoebe.
Hold on, you had to go fuck up a good argument by bringing Scarface into a discussion amongst gentlemen. Scarface is fucking trash, Don. It stinks. Only people who are holding up to that are the guys who are rappers who have the posters hanging in their MTV cribs. Right. Even Oliver Stone admits that it stinks in this day and age, and he wrote it in a coke-fueled haze. Never liked it. And you want to talk about a film that's only known for one fucking scene? Exhibit A right there.
Say hello to my little friend.
That's it.
I don't disagree, but I do. I still love Scarface.
But you're right.
Goodfellas is Ross. Friends. Goodfellas is Godfather 2.5. Not as good as 2, not as bad as 3. And finally, and most importantly, it's Goodfellows, F-E-L-L-O-W-S. If you can't take the time to spell check the title of your own movie, get off my TV.
That was the nail in the coffin.
There you go.
With a haircut like that demanding spell check, this, my friends, is the definition of irony.
So not James. A bad movie, not right. A great movie.
What's the number? I have bated breath here. What's the number?
It's a solid 5.5.
Fucking Christ. Lord Snert's prediction? 6 for Don. So not far off.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Turn holiday travel from stressful to rewarding. Rakuten helps you save big on travel. They give you cash back when you book with sites like Expedia, Best Western, and Hertz. Even better, you can stack cash back on top of other rewards, like airline miles, credit card points, and hotel loyalty programs. Rakuten partners with over 3,700 stores, including Away Luggage, Ray-Ban, and Macy's, so you can be prepared with all the travel essentials and, of course, cute fits for your trip. Keep the rewards going with cash back on holiday gifts for friends and family. With Rakuten, you'll never miss out on savings at your favorite stores. The stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Join for free and start your shopping at Rakuten.com or use the Rakuten app. That's Rakuten.
Kevin Israel. Oh, I'll quote Flounder from Animal House. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
All right. So first of all, when Goatee told me that you were doing this movie, I got excited. Cause a lot of times he'll come to me with the movies and I'm not interested in watching them. And Goodfellas is one of those movies. I was like, oh, I actually want to watch this. And my wife, had never seen the whole movie.
What?
So yeah, I know, which is bananas. So, I sat down to watch it and I was immediately like, what is Don going to say? Cause a lot of times we can go into these and you can kind of predict what the argument is going to be. And I wrote down what Don was going to say like halfway through the movie. And this is what I said. Don is going to argue disjointed storytelling. And I think I hit the nail on the head.
Yeah. You forgot voice. You forgot voiceover ad nauseum voiceover.
But I feel like the voiceover is what was trying to help the disjointed storytelling.
Yes.
And it, yeah. So, let's start out with why I like this movie. First of all, as I've beaten this horse to death over time.
Here it comes.
Characters. I love great characters. This movie, for me, some of the best characters you're going to see in a movie. Some of the most identifiable characters. And to me, listen, I'm not a Godfather fan. I could never get into it. I've watched it a number of times. It's slow. It's kind of boring. I just never got into the Godfather thing. To me, this is the gold standard as far as mob movies go, because it makes being a mobster look exciting and you get why somebody would want to do it. But then you also see the horror that it leads to and like why it's such a stupid, risky way to go with your life. Like it really shows both dynamics of this lifestyle, why people get drawn into it and then why it just destroys friendships, families, lives. I think it does a really good job. I also love coming of age stories, and I love the beginning of this movie with these, when they show the kids and how he gets into it and how, Tommy and Henry meet and Jimmy come. Like, I think I love that. I love seeing that. I love understanding how characters develop. What drives me crazy is when Jimmy walks in and they go, he was like 29 at the time. And it's like, he's 45 at least. And then when it's finally Ray Liotta as Henry, he's 21 when he first introduced Ray Liotta. Ray Liotta, I don't think looked 21 when he was 16. Liotta was born and looked 35. Like Ray Liotta was a middle-aged man from fucking It's a Boy.
When Ray Liotta was in the womb, he fell asleep in his mother's uterus, face down in a bed of nails inside her uterus.
She was smoking. I was just gonna say she was smoking cigarettes through her vagina. He was like, "Yeah, get one for you." But I do. I really do. I love these characters, and I'm not going to do the whole Godfather Goodfellas constant comparison, but it's just a great series of characters. It's also especially powerful because it's true, which Godfather isn't. The fact that this is all really, really close to accurate and told through his voice and through his experience really makes it. I think that just adds something to the movie. And it's, you get to see so many of these little snippets in their life. And I kind of, and looking at why the movie ended up sort of disjointed, I sort of get it, because there was probably so many points that he wanted to tell. I mean, otherwise the movie would have been, you know, it could have been three movies, but he wanted to hit some major points that were really impactful in their lives that really determined how they were going. Look, the Lufthansa heist, that when he started getting into the drugs, which really turned his life over, that when they were in prison, you know, all these moments. And then the women throughout the story, that how they impacted and affected his life and his relationship with his family and whatnot. It's a great example of how storytelling can be bolstered by great characters.
Mm.
All of that said, on rewatch, which I've seen this movie dozens of times, I realized something. I only ever watched the first three quarters of this movie. Because as soon as Tommy dies, the movie ends. I don't give a shit what happens after Tommy dies. I don't care that he goes state's evidence. I don't care that what happens to to Paulie and to Jimmy. I genuinely don't. Tommy is the point of this movie is that this terrible person exists and everybody just caters to him because they're so terrified of him. But even when somebody's that bad in this fucked up system of a criminal family, he's going to get his. And he does. And that's kind of the point of the movie to me. And then everything else is like, I don't give a fucking shit about that. Like the movie should have ended with him seeing that he was getting killed, him going, oh no. And then maybe the scene where he starts crying because they killed him. Everything else after this, the movie kind of falls apart and it almost slows down, even though it gets into this frenetic Henry Hill on coke for 25 minutes. Like the rest of the movie is just a cocaine fueled Hank Hill just going at it. And I just never really cared. You never hear anybody really talking about the last quarter of the movie. None of the scenes people quote is from the last quarter. None of the great moments come from the last quarter. The best scene in the last quarter of the movie, and that's a scene we probably could discuss just on our podcast itself, is, was Jimmy going to kill Karen? Was he going to kill Karen? And I actually looked it up, and apparently nobody knows. It was supposed to be ambiguous. It's supposed to be, yes, of course he's going to kill her because that's what Jimmy does. Or Karen and Henry had become so paranoid that they thought everybody was going to kill them. That is the only scene of any value in the last quarter of the movie for me. The storytelling is very disjointed because you get so many of these moments without any explanation of what happened to what in the last moment. Like he's got Janice, the girlfriend, and everybody's freaking out, and then suddenly she's just gone. We don't know what happened to her. She just they never address that.
And that's it. That's what nothing we do about it. She's gone.
Yeah. She's gone. It's done. And then Karen, who starts off as this very like good kind of goody two shoes Jewish girl, by the end, she's helping him. She becomes like an accessory. Like she's helping, but you never see
she's
that
doing coke too, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. But you never see any of that. You never see like how she got there. Just suddenly once she's yelling at him in prison about throwing, you know, sausage at him. And then suddenly she's helping him high cocaine and planning the whole thing. You never see the evolution into when did she make that sudden turn that she goes, I guess this is my life too. Like that seemed significant to me. The families, like her mother thinks Henry's Jewish, and then they get like they didn't know that he wasn't Jewish, like even at the wedding. Like it's just, and then suddenly if once that scene at the house, which I think is great when the mother yells at him and he just turns around and walks away.
Yeah.
I love that scene. But and then the mother's like, you know, he wasn't Jewish. Like you knew he wasn't Jewish the minute you saw it. Like nobody thought he was Jewish. Like that was, it just felt like almost like lazy, like, just go with it. And then his family, his dad, this strong Irish father who was beating him, just, I guess, lets go of it. Like he just gives up on his son. Like, and then you see him at the wedding. And I think that's the only time you see him again. And the brother is in a wheelchair. Why? We don't know anything about it. We don't hear anything about it again until he's stirring sauce like that at the end of the movie. Like, there's all this stuff that's given to us, but we never get more about it. And it's because of this disjointed storytelling. And I think it's interesting. I didn't know that, Don, about Scorsese having to put the voiceover in afterwards. And it makes complete sense. Cause if you watch this movie without that voiceover, it would be like watching 10 SNL skits in a row. And then somebody saying these are all related. Like it would have been tough to watch. I like the voiceover. I thought it gives almost an intimate feeling of the movie, like he actually is talking to you, especially since it is a true story from his perspective. I think her perspective always felt unnecessary. Like I didn't give a shit what she was going through, what she was thinking about. That's not what the movie was about. It wasn't about her, and it never felt like it was about her. But the storytelling definitely drags this movie down, but I'll still watch all of those scenes, them shooting Spider. The beginning of the movie is fucking flawless. Him meeting Karen and Karen driving up and screaming at him in front of his boys and him getting all flustered and realizing that he was turned on because she's so pissed at him. Like all, like so many great scenes in the first three quarters of the movie. But it does suffer from the disjointed storytelling. And it's funny because I was so hyper aware of trying to figure out what Don's argument was going to be, I was looking for the flaw in this movie, and I'd never thought about it until I watched it last night. And I'm so happy that was the point you made, because if you came in and were like, their accents were terrible, fuck this movie, like it would have been, it would have been disappointing. But Don, you're 100% right that the movie does suffer from the storytelling, but I still enjoy this movie much more than The Godfather. And I still think it's infinitely more rewatchable than The Godfather. And especially just because the scenes you can watch, you can watch 15 minutes of this movie and be like, that was fun, and then, you know, move on to something else. But I don't know how many times people watch this movie from soup to nuts. Like, I don't think a lot of people sit down and watch the whole thing. I bet people watch 30, 40 minutes of it and go, I've seen this movie a million times. No, you've seen 40 minutes of it a million times. You've probably seen the whole movie all the way through three times. And I think that's indicative of a good movie to a great movie. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know that this movie in my mind now qualifies as a great movie anymore because of that storytelling issue, but the characters are so good and the scenes in it are so good that they might overcome some of that shortcoming. But the fact that I wouldn't watch the whole movie all the way through, I think hits it. So I was prepared to give this movie, when I set into watching it, because I've seen it so many times, I was prepared to give it an 8.5. But after listening to Don's great argument and agreeing with them, I give it a 7.5.
Ooh. Lord Snurt says 9.5 for you, Kevin Israel.
Lord Snurt doesn't fucking know me. Give up, man. You don't know me.
He knows me better.
He's got me dead nuts on a lot of these scores. Fucking guy.
I'm an enigma.
No, don't try to be a white knight here. Tell the truth. Come on.
Listen. Well, these notes brought to you by guttingthesacredcow.com. Find yourself a pretty sweet-ass hat, mug, shoe. What am I saying? Shirt, thong. Why not? I'm sure it's there. guttingthesacredcow@gmail.com to say hi or advertise with us and leave us that 5-star rating that we so deserve. I mean, Christ almighty, if this isn't more entertaining than any fucking episode of That Metal Show, I'll see you in court. Got thought on that.
How dare you?
Notes. As a
why does De Niro look like every Boston comic when they first start out behind?
Right now. Oh, that's so true. Yeah, right here is Nick DiPaolo. Right there is Nick DiPaolo, and right over there is Lenny Clark. And there's Don. What's his name? Don Gavin. There's another one for you. Notes. I wish millennial kids still got the belt like Henry Hill did when he misbehaved. Although Don Jameson still gets the belt to hang himself so he can jerk himself off to completion these days.
Don Hutchins.
Nice. I spied Paulie Walnuts in the first 5 minutes of the scene. Did you guys catch him? He's at the cab stand hanging out. Did you notice? Without his tracksuit and a toothpick. Did you notice that too? I forgot the Weasley laugh and the was right is right, T, as he said in the show ad nauseum. I wonder if various other gangs have a first communion-like party for the first time they've been arrested. You hear me, MS-15 or 13, whatever it is? Do you guys have a blessing? Or how about you, Latin Kings or whatever? Do you guys do that as well? Jameson, have you ever been arrested besides soliciting dudes in the Rambles?
You mean the Brambles? No.
No. Whatever. See, you just failed the test.
Phil Schultz told me about it.
Nice attempt. Israel, you've never been arrested, right?
Yeah, I was once.
Nice. Let me guess. Singing too loudly in the subway?
Yeah. No, I was exposing myself on the subway, actually.
No. What was it for?
A mischief night in high school.
You got caught. You weren't fast enough for you.
Yeah, no. I ran right into the cop.
You idiot. Everyone's run different directions. Go. I have had maybe 4 dates where a friend dragged me out with them. Come on, man. I'll pay for your drinks. Just hang out. To fly wing like Tommy dragged out Henry. One of them turned out to be twins. That one I dated one for a year. Another one turned out to be a smoke show ginger. that I had relationships with in her parents' basement the first time and never called her like a mature person does. Most of these women, though, I show up and go, oh, and I go to the bathroom and I never come back. You know, mature shit. Oh, she's cute. Come on, man. Hang on. I'll pay your bar tab. Not tonight, man. I'll go home and play PlayStation 2 all night long before I pretend to show any interest in this cretin. Thank you, but no.
It's creep.
It took Ray Liotta three cracks with that pistol to bust open Karen's neighbor's nose. Was Ray mainlining Chantix, which made him woozy, that he couldn't do it in one?
Chantix.
Guys, I've never been pistol whipped because I've never tried to shoplift from a Walmart in 1995, but I have to imagine a gun butt across the nose and it gushes blood like Chris D'Elia's prom dates.
Wow.
Jesus.
Wow.
You say Jesus, I say it's factual. Okay. I love Scorsese's mom in the cameos in all of his films. She is a goddamn delight. Why don't you find yourself a nice girl? I find myself a nice girl every night, Mom. Let's come back to you. That shit's hilarious.
That's a good scene.
And when she's in Casino too, oh, the language, huh? By the way, Karen's mom, are you ready for this? This is the ultimate deep dive I've not even done. I'm watching, I know that voice. I paused it. Took about a minute and it came to me. Karen's mom is the wart face principal from Uncle Buck. I'll wait.
I've never seen Uncle Buck.
No clue.
You son of a bitch. Maybe she'd go down. Maybe she'd tell Karen's mom to go downtown and have a rat and all that thing off her face. Fuck you guys for not getting that quality reference. Uncle Buck is an American cinematic masterpiece.
You know, Kevin Meaney was supposed to be the role of Tommy.
Oh, really? And? Yeah. Oh, this is for real. Oh.
Yeah. Is that Uncle Buck? Kevin Meaney?
Okay. Gotcha.
Continue.
I shall. I always laugh my balls off when Henry comes home late and then Karen and the mom start in on him and then Pesci starts fucking around. You should be coming home this late, Henry. A husband has a responsibility. I love doing that to my friends when we come home late with their wives, start busting their balls. It's hilarious. You're right, Mike. You should come back this late. How good a father are you? The Billy Bat Shinebox scene is the most iconic scene of this film, Don Jameson. You're so wrong. That gets quoted way more. Am I funny? Am I a clown? Do I amuse you? Go home and get your fucking shinebox. That'll motherfucking mud. That is way more quoted.
No
way,
way
more cited.
Not even close.
Oh, 100%. Let's go to the polls. Heard? Vote on Twitter at GTSC Podcast. What scene is more ubiquitous? Billy Bat?
Put a poll up right now.
What's that? I'll put the poll up.
Put a poll up and then dance on it.
Yeah. I'll see you at the Go-Go-Rama. Don't pretend like you don't know where it is, boys. We all do.
I know. I can I can be there in 12 minutes.
Really? I'm jealous.
Bring your own.
I may have dated a few ladies who worked at the Go-Go-Rama.
Dated. You're so chivalrous and gentlemanly.
Like, I may have taken a Go-Go-Rama lady to Great Adventure, and it's an amazing story that I can't tell right now.
Let me guess. Someone got popped during lightning loops?
We went to the water park, and let's just say the lazy river wasn't so lazy.
Just prove my point. It's filled with coos juice and weaves. Shit you not. I went there with my wife years ago to Hurricane Harbor and a weave washed up on her foot. And she says, I'm out. I'm out. Let's see. Oh, my favorite Italian street joke. What's the difference between an Italian grandmother and an elephant? 20 pounds, a black dress, and a mustache. Hey. Come back for the – I'll have plenty of Irish jokes, too, if someone does Miller's Crossing or Gangs in New York to prove that I shouldn't have everyone equally. Thank you. What are your favorite Italian street jokes, gentlemen? Let's hear them.
Street jokes?
Wow.
I can't think of any. I mean, I'm sure I have them, but I can't come up with any.
Yeah, I got nothing. Oh. Sorry.
How the hell did De Niro learn that there are condos going up where they buried Billy Bats? Is he reading the real estate trade papers and then deciding to stick his toe in investing when he decides to get out of the mob? Is that how that works? I had a problem with that. I count four different members of The Sopranos in this. Paulie Walnuts, Frank Vincent, of course, Chris Moltisanti, and Gay Vito in the background, if you saw him.
Wow.
The dinner scene in jail is unreal. I can see Don Jameson muling in Hebrew National hot dogs, whipped cream, and several Bobbsey Twin books if Jim Florentine were to do some time in the joint.
I think it's by law we have to do the time together.
Yeah. An hour and 28 in, and we finally get our first Rolling Stone song in a Scorsese. He's about 60 minutes late for this one because that's all the man plays. Not complaining at all. Thank you, Don. But he's very late for that train. He jams about five of these things in there. Did you also notice the guy who ate rat poison and then was laughed at by Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels in Dumb and Dumber found his way into the bottom of a trash truck? Oh, no. Frenchie. No, you guys missed that one, too. All right, Kevin. This insanely unique talent of all these dumb ass esoteric references and sightings continues to be non-monetizing. Thank you. Every time I walk in the public bathroom that only has one toilet stall while getting cold shivers up my butthole, and then I see there's no toilet paper in said stall, I make the same face that Pesci did right before he got shot. Kevin, as you'll write my notes, it starts to slow down a little bit when Pesci gets killed.
See, you're the guy that knows the deep cuts on the Radiohead album. We don't know a lot of these scenes.
I don't like Radiohead.
You love them.
No. You sly son of a bitch. Hey, just think. You talk about it for a second. Henry goes to the outpatient facility or whatever to get his handicapped brother out for a day of family fun, right? He doesn't bring him to a strip club. No. Doesn't bring him to a Yankees game. No. Hell, he doesn't even take him to a Don Jameson bar show, for Christ's sakes. No. He brings him in the house to do what? To sit in that wheelchair and stir the goddamn sauce all day long. You know what sounds fun? Anything else but that. I would rather sit in that rehab facility and watch my roommate drool all over himself while I watch his old Facts of Life reruns. That's terrible.
Hey, Lisa Welch is still looking good, man.
Right, but she's a Jesus freak. That's a big old turnoff for me.
Blair, come on.
Me, you yeah. Do listen, I think Kevin Israel is more of a Tootie fan.
Tootie?
No, that was the Tootie that he picked up at the Go-Go.
Yeah. Maybe a Joe, if you're into that sort of thing.
Never pay for it.
Never.
I understand they have to set up Henry Hill's eventual downfall, but this does drag a tinge. Let's say that. I've seen it in this film a million times. And one thing I just remember, they didn't get the Boston College point shaving thing in there. Not even mentioned in the credits. This was a major event in sports, for Christ's sakes. I never thought this would be ever attempted gutting on this podcast. Godfather and this, two quintessential bulletproof films. This film checks all the main boxes. Quotable, rewatchable as fuck. Fantastic characters. This film is still arguably the first or second best mob film of all time. I'll argue this is Scorsese's best, with no regards given to The Irishman. What a snooze fest. And no apologies made to Jeffrey Paul. But thank you. I will completely agree with you, Kevin Israel. This film is off the meter for the remote test, the first three quarters of it. And by the way, the girl with the lucky hat, if I'm Karen, and she's giving Ray Liotta all this shit about a hat, how come she doesn't tell her to go shit in that hat and get in the goddamn car and go to the airport? Are you kidding me? A lucky hat. And by the way, what a not an attractive actress playing that role. I don't
know. No.
Quite unsettling. She looked like when she was one of those. Never mind. I'll get yelled at for that, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
I give this film is still great, but I agree. The storytelling has a little bit of a lag, but these characters are memorable. This film is quotable. In the first three quarters are just a joy. I still love it. 9.
Ooh, wow.
For still three quarters it. Of a film?
It's that good. It's that good. And again, I could still, that's how much it carries it. Again, Tommy, that ending. Otherwise, if they hit him for the entire film, which I understand why. And boy, why they not talk about Gotti killing him? Was that just released much after the fact? I don't know. Nine. I saw, but like, listen, I had 9.5, Don Jameson, but I dropped it half a point here. So I will.
And that was my mission. I said, if I can get you guys down a half a point each, I'll feel somewhat victorious here. Yeah. It's like being a pitcher for the Mets. If you could hold the other team to only 9 runs, that's sort of a moral victory.
Guys, we can make this a bullpen game after the second inning. Critics, five-star reviews. While there have been a fair few films focusing on the mob since 1990, few have achieved the same staying power, legacy, and adoration as Goodfellas. Oh, by the way, Lord Snert said 9.5. God damn, I cannot, cannot leave his shout. He's good. You. Never mind. Next one. It gives us splendiferous pieces, but it leaves us to fit them in a thematically coherent puzzle. The effort is pure pleasure. Splendiferous is how I would describe Don Jameson's scent of his belly button.
I hate this person.
I do too. Splendiferous. I've never seen a movie.
They also say ginormous.
Yeah. Sideburns. I've never seen a movie with such swagger. When you watch it, you feel like you're getting away with something. Something tells you this person is on one of those like Reddit pages on the naughty boy / R page.
I can't tell mommy I watched this. Yeah.
Someone who's got a full hard drive of twink porn. Anti-romantic, it nevertheless sweeps us into the lure of mob glamour, then slams us with the cost of its admission. Maybe in Poland, you pay admission after you see the movie, but in America, pal, we do things a little bit differently here, like paying to see the movie in front, up front. Critics, one-star reviews. Robert De Niro is reliably dynamic, and Joe Pesci's A Portrait of a Gangster with a Sense of Humor is hideously memorable, but there's no doubt that Goodfellas fights a losing battle against numbness. What does that mean? What does that mean?
Nothing.
While Scorsese generates vivid images, he covered this ground in the superb Mean Streets in 1973. Here, there's nothing to learn, nobody to sympathize with. Wrong. Mean Streets is fictional. It's not even the same. Not even the same fucking sport.
Nope.
Colorful, but dramatically unsatisfying. Although the same can be said about Don Jameson's lovemaking styles. Quote Bill Schultz. Okay.
He's not denying it.
Last one. Compared to
double jointed. I just want you to know.
In his penis.
I was going to say, is that on the profile? If not, that needs to be your tagline. Compared to less nitpicky gangster fare, Goodfellas still falters. What does less nitpicky gangster fare mean?
That's my mobster name.
Less nitpicky. Is that like an anti-OCD gangster here?
Yeah.
Christ.
Donnie nitpicks.
That would be the Jewish mob, Kevin Israel. Yeah. It's not good fellas. It's good fellers, okay? Huh? Amazon, 5-star reviews. I'm not the person who enjoys watching a movie I've already seen. I actually try to avoid watching something I've already seen because many things are best left in your memory. For instance, I remember seeing Flight of the Navigator as a kid and thinking it was the most amazing movie ever. I made a big mistake in thinking my children would enjoy it, and it was painful. I guess my standards back in the 80s were pretty low, and movies have gotten better over the years. Anyway, Goodfellas is so amazingly done that I would consider it a timeless masterpiece. The cast is excellent. The directing is excellent. There's nothing that is not amazing about this film, well, except for one little mess that I noticed. Look it up yourself. And that is where Ray Liotta is at his apartment, and he's visited by Paulie. Pay attention to Ray's neck. One moment, he has a religious necklace on, and when the camera pans back, he's wearing a different one entirely. One is a Christian cross, the other is a Star of David. Someone messed up here. Signed, Mel Gibson.
Talk about nitpicky.
Right? By the way, I never saw as a kid. Watched maybe a year or two ago, Flight of the Navigator, and wowza. It's as bad as being stuck on a cruise ship with Wes Anderson fans. That film stunk.
Is that where the kid becomes, it's a spaceship?
Yes.
And he suddenly gets like tied to the spaceship or something, and he's like the only one who can fly it.
Are you playing with your Voltron as you do this podcast, Kevin Israel?
I am.
Saw that. Oh, I have a baseball I fiddle with. You have a Voltron. Don Jameson fiddles with his pocket pussy, but we're not judging.
Is that what that buzzing is?
It was hard not to see it happen. Maury's wigs on TV ads, bodies in Cadillacs at JFK, streets, clubs, Henry, Jimmy, Tommy, Paulie, real people up front. My girl comes home and I ask her about her hairdresser's appointment, and she says her hairdresser's torso just turned up in Jamaica Bay. I like the fact that it was based on a true story. Signed, Ralph Wiggum. Did you fuck up that badly on a haircut? You end up in Jamaica Bay? I said, give me the number 2 on the sides, not a number 5, you mutt. Classic. I just don't have any respect for De Niro anymore. Signed, Joe Pesci.
Very hurtful.
Amazon, 1-star reviews. I know this is supposedly a classic good film, but I did not care for it. I did not care for the lame narration. Boring, predictable, and crap acting. Sorry. I know this is likely blasphemy since this film is such a classic, but that was my take. I wasted 2.5 hours of my life that I will never get back. The only good part of this film is I now know where all those blasted memes are from the laughing gangster.
Anyone who uses the adjective blasted... It's completely eliminated from any kind of opinion.
They had to have worked on a cartoon in the 80s where you couldn't say fucking. Yeah. It was always those blasted Ninja Turtles.
Right. And as much as I love that they gave a 1-star review, the acting was generally very good in the movie.
Fucking Pesci won Best Supporting Actor. Christ almighty.
He was great. De Niro was great. And Ray Liotta's, that's his best performance ever. But Paulie?
Not so much. This next one was written by Amazon writer Cat Lover, to give you an idea where this person's coming from. And in caps, very expensive for a very old movie. And there's the Kevin Israel special, kids. What is very expensive? I own this film, so I didn't have to pay for it. I have to assume it's no more than $4.99. No more.
That's exactly what it cost.
Guess who guys both showcases, motherfucker? Me. $4.99. You don't own this film, Israel? I'm surprised.
No. I don't own anything anymore.
Wow. Well, listen, at least the divorce hearings will be quick and painless for you. No. Next one. I'm calling this time for the someone missed the entire message of the film review. I'm amazed that this film is so highly regarded. It glamorizes the lifestyle of men in the mob, mass murderer, sociopaths, and of course, broads, in quotes, as women are referred to in this film, exist only to be banged, in quotes, or to cook and raise children. I guess if you're a hyper-masculine man who gets off on violence and machismo, you'll like this movie. Otherwise, go read a book or watch a film that honestly depicts the horrors of organized crime.
That's bad.
I can see someone's Italian dad chasing them with a belt as he wrote this review right now.
I can't imagine too many people watch this movie and went, you know what? That's what I want to do.
Right. That's kind of what the idea is of the film, you dumb.
Why did they gloss over the violence?
Yeah. By the way, they made them take out 10 frames of a film when they shot Spider. They thought it was MPAA, thought it was too bloody, and they yanked out 10 frames, and they thought that was the tripping point for this. Wow. Tipping point, excuse me. Next one. Two. They're quick, but they're funny. It is not specific about audio features if it's Latin Spanish or Castilian, Spanish. guys, I hate to break it to you, but in nowhere in this film do they say Ibiza instead of Ibiza. Last one. Boring plot development. The most redeeming quality about this movie is the shoes.
The shoes?
What foot fetish asshole wrote this? Quentin Tarantino? Dang.
Damn it.
Come on. Come on. We've done this together too long. I cut that off in the past.
You could have at least put a Rex Ryan reference in there.
Yeah, I could have. I already did two Jets jokes already. I think you've taken enough of a beating, as well as in life with being a Jets fan. And of course, we're going to wrap up by asking, who's funnier, ChatGPT or KG? I asked ChatGPT to write only three jokes because, let's be honest, ChatGPT ain't going to be the reason. Oh, actually, the strike is over, so that's not the reason why they decided to come back to work, as ChatGPT is out here pumping these jokes out. Number one, why did Tommy DeVito always carry a spare tire? Just in case he needed to make a getaway car on the spot. I think I heard that one at Don Jameson's taping at the McSorley's Inn. The whistling doesn't work on your mic.
Oh, the okay. If I could put a cricket emoji up there, it would fill the whole screen.
Next one. What's the favorite topping off of a Goodfellas fan? Oh, my God. Whack-a-roni and cheese.
That was the best one I've heard yet.
My asshole is still puckered up. I'll figure that out when it unpuckers. Next one. Oh, what do you call a mobster who's always late? Forget about it on time. The slogan of Air Italia, right? What horseshit.
Oh, ChatGPT, say you're funny and see what it says back to you.
Oh, Kevin Israel, did Don Jameson gut the sacred cow?
I think he did. And I know we're going to lock horns. We might lock horns on this, but I think because number one, he couched it in that he wasn't saying this is a terrible movie. He just thinks it's overrated. And I think he accomplished his goal through a very concise and well-formed argument in proving that it is overrated due to its disjointed storytelling. So I give him the W.
I'll give you a W too, Don. If I drop my score, any kind of points, that's an automatic, we'll call it gutting, but we're going to call it in this case the overrating. So well done. Little surprising. The herd's going to lose their tits on this.
We're going to get slaughtered.
I'm not. Fuck you guys. I'm standing firmly in camp. This is still a solid movie. Guys and girls, God damn, that was a fun episode. I hope you thought so. I know you thought so. Who's shitting who? We'll see you all next time. Take care.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.